is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Good to be with you this lunchtime. Indonesian feedlots have been really hurting this year because of the record high price of Aussie cattle. Now they're struggling with the super high prices for corn.
If we could get world parity in corn price in Indonesia, we would feed a lot more corn to our cattle and we would have a cheaper production. But it would also reduce the cost and price of chicken. And I think we need to be mindful of that, that if we have cheaper grain for cattle, we'll have cheaper grain for chicken.
A mysterious form of pasture dieback's been causing all sorts of problems in Queensland and New South Wales. Is it now making its way towards the Northern Territory? That's the concern.
It seems to come in seasonal leaps, and I think the main problem is that people don't see it early on. So we really want people to get out there early. I'm very concerned about how far west this is getting now.
Yeah, we've got a big country hour today. Let's get stuck into it. It is, of course, Budget Day in the Northern Territory. Happy Budget Day to you. The Chief Minister and Treasurer, Michael Gunner, he has just handed down the 2021 budget. He says the Territory's economy is recovering quicker than expected.
The last budget showed Territorians the beginnings of our recovery. This budget shows that the comeback is stronger than we expected. While the Territory's economy had been predicted to go backwards during this financial year, it's now estimated to grow by 4.7%, a big turnaround. And growth forecasts for each year in this budget are stronger than previously predicted. State final demand, which measures local consumption and investment, is expected to bounce back by more than 4% this year, reversing its run of negative growth. Again, every year in the forecast is stronger than the previous projections. But what's so encouraging about this growth is where it is coming from. In the last term of government, our priority was protecting jobs as the economy made a difficult transition out of the Inpex construction boom. It meant government stepping in when the private sector couldn't to keep the Territory moving. We can now see that work has paid off. In this financial year, private sector investment in the Territory is estimated to grow by nearly 10%. Household consumption is expected to grow by more than 4%. Housing investment by more than 17%. The forecasts from 21-22 show that our population will go up, not down. Jobs will go up, not down. People are choosing the Territory again, to live here, to work here, to invest here. This is good news. Even better is the knowledge that this is just the beginning. These forecasts are conservative because they do not factor in growth from projects that are coming down the track. A good example is the Santos Barossa gas field project. It was left out of the last budget's projections, but now the final investment decision has been made. It is in this budget. Our forecasts include about $11 billion worth of major projects in the Territory, like the Barossa project, the ship lift, the Tyndall base development, and much more. And there's about $35 billion worth of planned and proposed projects that are in the pipeline, but not yet in our growth projections. The world's largest solar farm, the world's biggest prawn farm, new mining projects, new fibre cable investments, and new defence infrastructure.
The Chief Minister and the Treasurer, Michael Gunner, delivering his budget speech just a short time ago. It is Budget Day in the Northern Territory. Let's have a closer look at it. I'm joined now by Joe Laverty, who was in the budget lockup there this morning. What do we need to know, Joe?
Well, you need to know that this comes in great many books. So I've got four huge books.
And aren't they shiny?
They're not as shiny as they could be. I think they've been quite frugal with the payments for the printout this year. But you've heard the Chief Minister there. It sounds really optimistic. And he does present as being somebody who is optimistic about the future and very happy with how things have turned out so far. You've heard the Chief Minister say that the net debt is forecast to be $9 billion. And he's very pleased that that's $1 billion better than expected. But let's not forget, it's still $1 billion deeper in debt than we currently are today. So it's still worse than what we are now, but better than what we thought we were going to be. There is a $1.4 billion deficit for the upcoming financial year. And I love breaking it right down into how much it costs in interest, because famously last year we realised that the interest alone was $1 billion a day, slightly over
over a million dollars a day. Yep.
So next year, next financial year, it's expected to go up by $100,000 a day. So it'll be $1.189 million a day.
And by the end of the forward estimates, we're looking at an interest bill of about $1.3 million a day.
Don't look there.
Every single day. I saw one comment from Jono Gibson. He says, despite improvements, the budget books are still stained in red.
But they're better than they thought they would be. And that's the important thing that we need to remember.
There's some money being splashed around. What stood out to you, Joe Leverty?
This is something that people are going to be very pleased with. This was something that was speculated about, but they're not so weren't so sure until today. There's more money in those tourism vouchers, quite a bit more actually. So there's $5 million in tourism vouchers for Territorians to spend in the Territory. And then there's $5 million for interstaters to come up and spend in the Territory as well. And there's $4 million for the Roadhouse to Recovery Project, the grants that have been issued, which were quite successful.
That's an extra $4 million too.
An extra $4 million. Mm. So that's what's been announced. I don't think that they've actually specifically said when it will be released just yet, but given that this dry season is looking so good, you might expect that it would probably coincide with the wet season of next year.
Chief executives have been given a big warning today.
Oh, yes. So this is a big change, right? So this is legislation now. So if a department goes over budget by more than 1%, which is a very narrow margin, then the chief executive could be hauled, well, will be hauled in front of the chief minister and given issued a please explain. And if it's upwards of 3-5%, very likely to lose their job, says the chief minister. Now, I say that, and we remember from the Langland report, which came out, the chief minister saying heads will roll if they go over budget. And then the next budget, lots of departments went over budget and no heads rolled. So we'll see how this one turns out.
Wasn't there a commitment to not to hire any more public servants? What happened to that?
That's still in place. Excuse me. That's still in place. So that wage freeze remains with the $1,000 incentive at the end of the year, which comes out. Now, here's another interesting change for the public servants. So in a department, they have usually a personnel cap, how many staff you're allowed to hire.
Yeah.
They're changing it. So it's no longer how many staff you can hire. They're going to have a wage amount that you can use to hire people. So presumably what will be able to happen is rather than having five really experienced, highly paid people under you, you could have 10 less experienced, less paid people. So that's how that might
work. Not so much about number of people, it's more of what fits
Absolutely.
Into the budget.
You've got $300,000 to spend on wages. How are you going to spend it? That's how it's going to work. Now, there's some good stuff if you live in Tennant Creek.
Yes.
So Tennant Creek, all ears pricked
Hello
up.
Hello to everyone Hello, on 106.1 this afternoon. Yes.
The Barkly visitor experience, including the gold rush and ore mining interpretive display at a cost of $3.839 million. And there's going to be an entry statement along the road on the Stuart Highway into Tennant Creek. Do you know what an entry statement is?
No.
No, me neither. This big sign or a statue or something.
As always, when the budget first comes out, there's often a lot of questions and not as many answers. You've got the Treasurer, the Chief Minister on your program tomorrow.
Yes.
What are you keen to know more about?
Look, I'm really interested in something that was up and in the centre. So he mentioned it in his speech. He's got it on one of the first bits of paper that we were handed in the budget lockup is a $20 million commitment to maintain police numbers as they are now per year, ongoing. So every year, $20 million. And my question is, what if the aim is just to merely keep the same number of police, why is it costing an extra $20 million a year? $20 billion a year to have what we've already got? How is that broken down? And then there are a few changes. There's quite a lot of money being spent on CCTV and security and surveillance. There's some extra funding for youth diversion programs. There are some interesting statistics around when a kid gets sent to one of those youth diversion programs, what is the recidivism rate like? And previously it was reported that recidivism was at 20%. But you see in the budget, it's now up to 40%. And I asked why that was. And they said, oh, it's a way that we have changed the way that we collect the data. So they've said it's not really a doubling. It looks like a doubling, to which I say what it actually shows is that you are underestimating the recidivism rate of these youth diversion programs in the past.
Spoke to someone this morning. They feel like they can't remember a budget that's had so many asterisks in it. There's a lot of refer to the bottom for, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Treasurer is on tomorrow. What time do we tune in?
That's going to be after 7:30 this morning. Have a look at abc.net.au/news for Jano Gibson's article. He's well across it as well. That's a good one. And on ABC TV tonight as well.
Okay. Thank you for your time this afternoon, Joe Laverty. Just before we went to air today on The Country, I got a chance to speak to the Minister for Agribusiness and Aquaculture. She's also the Minister for Trade and Industry, Nicole Mennison. I asked her what she thinks is in this budget for territory primary producers. Let's have a listen.
I think this is a great budget to support the industry. We will be continuing with the redevelopment of Berrima Farm, and this is a really important piece of infrastructure to support primary producers right across the Northern Territory. We've got another $16 million in the budget as part of the $40 million redevelopment of the precinct to make sure that we have modern facilities that meet the needs of industry, to make sure that we've got the best biosecurity, the best surveillance, the best monitoring to support everybody out there. So another $16 million where we're going to see the building agricultural laboratory, which has been there since pre-Cyclone Tracy. It will be getting replaced with a new modern facility, and I'm very pleased that we will be opening in the next few weeks the molecular laboratory, which will be just an amazing asset to Northern Australia and the Northern Territory. We're talking about a biosecurity containment level 3, which will be the highest in the NT. And again, this is about making sure that the industry is supported with the best monitoring and surveillance out there.
So the industry and the department's getting upgrades at Berrima Farm, but the department's budget is getting cut by about $7 million. Why is that?
Well, it's about different federal programs that have come to the end. So you look at things like citrus canker, for example. So some things are time limited, but when you look at the great programs that we are continuing, $3.3 million for research and development to improve the productivity of the territory's cattle industry. Really important programs that support research around calf mortality, sustainable pastoral grazing, making sure that we can get our cows growing as quickly as possible. So that's really important money. Or the $2.5 million to make sure that we're supporting the horticultural industry and production as well. So there is good funding in there. There's a lot of support out there for the industry, and we're going to be making sure that we do everything to continue growing it, particularly given the attention and focus and the opportunities that have been presented through the Territory Economic Reconstruction Commission. As we know, we do want to see agribusiness grow. We want to see aquaculture grow in the territory. So we're looking at more ways that we can also get better use of our land out there and to get more investment right across the territory too.
A headline is the $500,000 to fast track sustainable development precincts for agribusiness. When you pay four or five bureaucrats, what's left in that budget?
Well, if you don't have the people to do the work, Matt, you won't get it done as quickly as you need to get it done to get that investment and to get the work that you need done to shore up an area for investment. So you actually
is it essentially funding for wages? Is that $500,000 is purely wages?
So that is going into getting five people on the job to look at these sustainable precincts and to make sure that we can open up more areas of the Northern Territory for investment. And again, I've got to stress that, you know, it is still pretty tight times here, Matt, with the budget, and this is shown by the government what a priority of getting more investment and growing agribusiness here in the Northern Territory by putting these positions, these additional positions, into an area where we think we can get a really good bang for buck for the territory.
Anything else you think our country, our audience should be aware of in terms of today's budget?
Well, I think this is a budget, like I said, where there's a lot to be really positive about going forward into the future, but we want to get these opportunities out of the ground faster. So we're continuing to support the really critical areas of our cattle industry, of our horticulture industry, to create more opportunities in aquaculture and to open up more land for investment. You do need to have a department with the right facilities, though, to be able to support those industries. And I've got to stress, it has been a Labor government that has done the Berrima Farm redevelopment to support the industry right across the Northern Territory. That place was old and falling apart when we came to government, and we've made sure that they now have out there a modern facility that means that we can grow industry, protect industry and support industry. And it's great to see that we're going to continue to develop the precinct. So it truly is world class because we want to keep supporting a world class industry here.
And just finally, Minister, the federal government says it will allocate 370 odd million to biosecurity measures in its budget next week. Have you got any suggestions on where some of that money could go in the north?
I have not got the details yet of what the federal government intend to do, but of course we'll continue working very closely with our counterparts there. Biosecurity is vital. Since I've become the minister, it has always been one of the top issues that all the different sectors raise with me constantly, that we must always have top biosecurity standards. So I'll be continuing discussions with the federal government to see how I can make sure that we pull as much funding into the territory as possible.
I know you're very busy today, so thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
The Territory's Minister for Agribusiness, Nicole Mennison. If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour. It's Budget Day in the Northern Territory, and it is 14 minutes to 1 o'clock. Now, in the Territory's budget is $20 million to upgrade the Francis Bay mooring lock in Darwin, a.k.a. the Duck Pond, the mighty Duck Pond, where the seafood industry does all of their unloading and plenty more. Catherine Winchester is the Chief Executive of the NT Seafood Council. $20 million is a lot of money, Catherine. What's your hopes on how it will be spent?
Yes, well, the media is indicating that it's for a new lock gate. So every year, I'm not sure if you're aware, but basically the lock gets shut down for 3 to 4 weeks as they do the annual maintenance. And so it's in need of some TLC. It's very old facilities. Getting a new lock gate and hopefully getting a spare lock gate as well so that the industry isn't essentially either locked up in that duck pond for the 3 weeks while maintenance work is done, or has to unload at Fisherman's Wharf, which is much slower and more difficult, would be a huge improvement for us.
Right. So if successful, the upgrade would mean the seafood industry doesn't get kicked out onto Fisherman's Wharf for a month or so every year. That would be the hope?
So, definitely. Look, we did an infrastructure needs report in 2019, which was supported by the government with some funding support, and that highlighted a lot of the facilities at the mooring basin are in need of some attention. So things like improved shade facilities, but the big issue was the lock and this 3 week closure, which essentially, if a boat didn't move out of the lock, it was stuck in there for 3 or 4 weeks. And for those boats that are out on the water, it makes things a lot slower with the other facilities. So, definitely there's lots to be done. I'm not sure how far they can spread the $20 million, but it's most definitely welcome.
How long has it been since this important bit of infrastructure for the seafood industry has received a bit of attention and funding?
Oh, look, it's been receiving attention and funding, particularly in the last sort of 5 to 7 years, but they're all small pieces of work and they've all made improvements. But, you know, as a I think it's around 30 years old, that facility. So things like concrete, you know, having concrete erosion and things like that that just happen over such a long time, it's in need of, maintenance and bigger maintenance rather than just a little Band-Aid and patchwork.
Overall, for the seafood industry, what's caught your attention in today's budget?
Oh, look, I think overall a real sense of coordination, I guess, amongst all the announcements. So it's great to see the recommendation from the Economic Recovery Report being acted. So big investments in infrastructure, roads, you know, we all need to use roads to get our products from A to B, the investment in the mooring basin, and just that recognition that in the fishing industry in particular, it's recognised as an area where it's going to contribute to the growth of the territory, and putting money behind those things that will help make it happen, but also supporting those other sectors as well. You know, tourism is going to be really important going forward. Our members provide the restaurants with the local seafood that the tourists are looking for. So, you know, seeing the tourism vouchers returns, great. That's what the tourism and hospitality sector, one of the many things they're asking for. So it's just nice to see all these things coming together, focusing on jobs and focusing on, getting people working together. I think the departments, very clear message there to stay on budget. Mm. And so I think, again, like we've been working closely with departments on priority areas, and things like today's announcement for the mooring basin, as I mentioned from our 2019 report, we're working with the government on things like seafood processing facilities. The closer we work with departments on these initiatives and using industry to do what industry does well and the government to do their bit is the way to go.
Thanks for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Catherine Winchester is the Chief Executive of the NT Seafood Industry Council. $20 million coming the way of the duck pond. It is 9 to 1 here on the Country Hour. It is budget day. Dan Fitzgerald joins me in the studio. He missed out on getting a Guernsey there in the lockup, but he's just been beavering away, just absolutely gorging on the budget papers. Anything else we need to know about this afternoon, Dan?
There's some money for Aboriginal Ranger groups, Matt. The grants program that funds that group, that's been extended by another 4 years with $12 million over those 4 years.
Right.
In terms of mining, $45 million over the next 5 years has been committed towards supporting minerals exploration. Michael Gunner gave it a bit of a plug in his speech today. Said there's currently 19 projects across the territory working towards final investment decision. Also, a bit of money for the Katherine Showgrounds, $2.2 million to improve infrastructure, to upgrade the rodeo and the campgraph infrastructure and some amenities there for Katherine.
Okay, $2.2 million for the Katherine Showgrounds.
Yeah, it's been on the cards for a little while. They're going to move, the plan is to move those campground arenas to the other side of the showgrounds. There is some money in for roads, but as we know, roads funding can be a little bit tricky, and we're still trying to work out just exactly what is new money and what is going to be spent over the next...
And when it will be spent.
When it will be spent. So we're going to take a bit of a closer look at that before we go into too much. But one did stand out at me is that is some funding for the Central Arnhem Road, which is in some dire need of some upgrades. There's been some funding announced for that already, but in the budget included for the spending period for 2021-22, there's $78 million is committed for upgrading that road, the Central Arnhem Road.
And another year, another dot point allocating money for a Katherine Logistics and Agribusiness Hub. We see this figure every year since it was first flagged in 2016. Will it get spent? We'll just have to wait and see. But it's there again, $28.9 million.
It's a long way to go.
It's there every year. Has anything actually happened out there? I don't know. All right. Thanks for that, Dan. And as Joe Laverty mentioned, there's a great write-up on the ABC News website about the budget right now. You should go and check it out.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dave Burns. I manage the Katherine Farm for Nutrano Produce Group. I'm here with my faithful companion, Marco the Labrador. And welcome to the Country Hour.
Now, the federal government has today announced that in its budget out next week, there's going to be a $370 million package for biosecurity measures. Research out of the University of Melbourne suggests that for every dollar spent on biosecurity by government, $30 is made by industry. So it sounds pretty good. But let's take a closer look at the detail of this announcement. Warwick Long's just spoken to Professor Andrew Robertson.
It's rare to get a so substantial an injection of cash. That said, we have had injections similar scope in the past, such as the agricultural white paper. But this is a very significant investment and very welcome.
What stands out to you as part of the biosecurity package?
So the thing that I find most enheartening is focusing on freight containers. There's a substantial pathway of hitchhiker pests on freight containers, especially over the last year or so, where we've noted a significant increase in the interceptions of Capra beetle in freight containers. But before that, we had brown marmorated stink bug, and before that, we had giant African snail and red imported fire ants. So there's a history of freight containers being substantial pathways for damaging pests. And tackling the freight container problem is really difficult because it's hard to know where they've been. And different pests have different habits. So, for example, for a giant African snail, you'd want to know which containers have been next to or above or beneath an infested container. Whereas for Capra beetle, you'd want to know what the containers have carried for the past, let's say, 5 years, because if they've had a Capra-sensitive commodity in them 5 years ago, they may still be carrying the pest.
$100 million for an offshore assurance program to identify freight containers for intervention. How could that work in your view?
So the key thing would be to be able to identify which containers have been exposed to risk and use that information to prioritise intervention at the border. I imagine that, so as I pointed out earlier, containers have a long-standing history of being a significant pathway for hitchhiker pests. And the trick, of course, is to know which ones you need to intervene with. There's something like 2 to 3 million container arrivals in Australia every year, and you can't afford to examine all of those containers. Consequently, the smart thing to do is to prioritise the intervention to undertake at the border. But to do that, you need information about the containers. And containers are notoriously difficult to keep information on.
A lot of this biosecurity announcement, I note that there's a $20 million for pre-border passenger screening trials, $30 million for improvement of biosecurity management for international mail. A lot of this seems to be information gathering and trying to target where to put biosecurity responses and target what to or who to intercept when they're entering our borders. Is that how you get the most bang for your buck in terms of monitoring biosecurity?
It depends entirely on the nature of the threat. In most instances, you do get really good benefits from early intervention, for managing the risk as close as possible to its source. And that's a generalization, but it certainly holds true in biosecurity. But there are some things you just can't prevent by means of border or pre-border activities. So think about pests that might arrive in the wind or in the tide from our northern neighbours. They can't be stopped at the border. So we do need substantial investments in the post-border biosecurity area. And you'll note that there's a $67.4 million investment for national surveillance for Australia's animal sector. And that's an example of a post-border investment.
Just this week, we had stories in regards to that on the lack of vets in regional Australia and what that meant to our own surveillance system for things like exotic pests and diseases.
Yes.
Does $67 million help in that regard?
I don't know how the spending is going to be targeted. So I can't comment on that.
Are we beholden with announcements like this, particularly on biosecurity, to what the biggest threat is at the time? You mentioned Capra beetle and its risk in containers, but also a lot of this funding is for travellers coming through from overseas, and we've seen a lot of announcements and intercepts of meat coming through the border that way with the risk of African swine fever. Does biosecurity money generally go to what is the big threat or the big risk at the time?
I'm very encouraged by what I see in this announcement, in that it doesn't seem to be particularly focused on high-profile pests, but rather it addresses the pathways that those pests may come in on. Consequently, will help kind of future-proof those pathways against future pests that we can only anticipate right now.
That's Professor Andrew Robinson, who is a director of the Centre of Excellence for Biosecurity Risk Analysis, based here at the University of Melbourne. He was speaking to Warwick Long about this announcement that's coming out of the federal government. There's going to be a lot of money in next week's budget for biosecurity. That announcement made by the Prime Minister at Beef Week over in Rocky. We'll be heading to Rocky in the second half of the Country Hour. It is Beef Week. One of the concerning topics being discussed is about pasture dieback. There's a particular strain getting around. Is it on its way to the Northern Territory? We'll talk more about this in a moment. But now it's news time, 1 o'clock.
My name's Brett Gill. My wife Suzanne and I farm and have cattle on Mullalungwe in the Douglas Daly area, the top end. You're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. Happy Budget Day. I trust you are well. Have you had a chance to look at the Territory Budget? Is there something in it for you? If you missed our coverage earlier on, you'll be able to catch it via the podcast. And there is a great article up on the ABC News website right now giving you a rundown. Despite the improvements, the budget books are still stained in red, writes Jarno Gibson, with no surplus forecast for at least the next decade. Coming up on the Country Hour, we'll be talking about the price of corn and why it's putting a lot of pressure on Indonesian feedlots.
If we could get world parity in corn price in Indonesia, we would feed a lot more corn to our cattle and we would have a cheaper production. But it would also reduce the cost and price of chicken. And I think we need to be mindful of that, that if we have cheaper grain for cattle, we'll have cheaper grain for chicken.
Yeah, that story and plenty more is coming up in this next half hour. But first, let's go to the Weather Bureau. Ange Prasad is there this afternoon. How are you, Ange?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. How are you?
I'm well. Happy Budget Day.
Same to you.
Now, the Bureau has today put out its wet season summary. What can you tell us, Ange Prasad?
Well, yes, it has just come out. So most parts of the Northern Territory recorded above average rainfall during the wet season months of October to April. If you have a look at the climate map, generally the place that did miss out was the Barkly.
Yep.
Northern Barkly and also along the eastern border. So that was generally about 50 to 100 millimetres less than what they would normally get in the wet season. So generally, sort of in terms of rainfall, the rainfall totals were generally above average everywhere else. And territory-wide rainfall was 21% above the long-term average and the highest since the wet season of 2016-2017. One thing that was quite noticeable was the lack of tropical cyclones.
Zero. A big zero for the Northern Territory.
Yes. So it's not unprecedented. Last season where we didn't have any tropical cyclones was in the 2015-16 wet season. Now, in terms of monsoon onset, we did have an early monsoon onset this year on 19th of December, compared to, for example, last year. In terms of temperatures, overall, both daytime and nighttime temperatures across the territory were marginally above the long-term average. The mean maximum temperature was 0.34 degrees above average, while the mean minimum temperature was 0.78 above average.
I've got the map up that shows Australia and the wet season months, October to the end of April, and the colouring as to whether it was an average wet season, above average, very much above average. Nothing, from what I can tell off that, there were no records this wet season.
Yes.
In the Barkly, there is a very small patch of red indicating below average.
Yep.
I haven't got
yes.
the pastoral map in front of me, but it'd be interesting to see.
It looks like
there's a couple, maybe one or two poor stations that have done it quite tough.
Quite tough in that. I totally agree with that.
Do we have a 3-month outlook now for our dry season? And anything
we certainly do. So in terms of rainfall, we're looking at a dry 3-month outlook for the top end. We might see more cloud bands this dry season in the next 3 months. So there is some light rainfall forecast for central and southern parts of the territory. There is a cloud band moving through central Australia at the end of this week. So that's a good example of that. In terms of temperatures, the next 3 months, it is looking warmer than average for the maximum temperatures over the northern half of the territory, while it'll be average for central Australia. And isn't looking particularly good for the minimum temperatures, Matt, generally above average for much of the Northern Territory.
In terms of the week ahead for the NT, what should we know about?
Yes, it's a bit topsy-turvy through central Australia. Cooler today, about 3 to 5 degrees through Yulara, Alice Springs. And that lasts for a couple of days before warmer temperatures return on Thursday. It starts becoming warm in Yulara from tomorrow, actually. And then the warm conditions continue until the weekend. We're expecting a cloud band to develop through central Australia. So initially affect the southern Lassiter and then spread to the much of the Lassiter and the Simpson on Saturday. Generally, the heavier falls will remain south of the border in South Australia, but we're expecting the area around Yulara to get about 5 to 10 millimetres. Closer to Alice, it'll be much less, and we're thinking just a few millimetres, 1 to 2 at best.
And when does this come in again, sorry?
It starts on Friday. So it's a 2-day event. Yes, yep. Starts on Friday and then wraps up on Saturday night. So back to cooler conditions on Sunday. And that hopefully, with that surge late in the weekend, that will hopefully bring the temperatures down to the May averages. So the current cool change does drop the temperatures, but doesn't drop it to the May average. So stays above above average.
Yeah. Just back to the potential for rain, like a place like Culgra. Can I expect to get some?
Yes. Yes. So for this event, yes, they will get some rain. So generally, I'm thinking similar to Yulara, 10 to 15 millimetres. And the climate outlook doesn't look too bad for central Australia. It is going for some rainfall over the next 3 months.
Yep. All right, then. Thanks so much for your time, Ange.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Happy Budget Day.
Here's a surprising fact. The average person will spend 1.3 years of their life just doing this. No, not washing the car. No, it's working out what to watch on the telly. Huh? Surprising, right? But don't panic. You can save a lot of that time on ABC iView. Jaw-dropping comedy, eye-popping drama, and all the mind-blowing telly you could wish for. Download the app now on your phone, tablet or smart TV. ABC iView. Don't be surprised if you're surprised.
It is 12 to 1. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Well, is a mysterious disease that's affecting pastures in parts of Queensland and New South Wales now making its way to us towards the Northern Territory. The Queensland Agriculture Department says it's recently verified reports of pasture dieback on the Darling Downs and is very concerned about its march west. Queensland University of Technology's Caroline Hawkswell spoke to Madeline McCosker at Beef Week about the worrying trends of this dieback, which is thought to be spread by mealybugs.
It seems to come in seasonal leaps, and I think the main problem is that people don't see it early on, so we really want people to get out there early. I'm very concerned about how far west this is getting now. We will be out towards Cloncurry area in the next... In about 2 weeks from now, we're going to leave. We really want to hear from grazies out there that way. We'd like to visit some farms that are pretty sure they've got mealybug. But we need people to start looking while it's small, manage it early, rather than letting it get really big and get a strong toehold in those districts.
What is the concern for it spreading out into the western districts?
Don't know, especially with that cold weather, you know, they. But this strategy of going deep into the ground is an important one. Healthy soils seem to produce plants that are more resilient to it in the long run. So it's a lot of it's about that long-term pasture health and particularly pasture diversity with a range of different grasses and legumes and brassicas and forbs in there that are not weeds, that are palatable grasses, and managing for those.
One of the things that was discussed was that it seems to prefer high rainfall areas. I'm from out west. I'm based in Longreach. I don't know if I'd consider Western Queensland a high rainfall area. So why is it that we could potentially see it spreading to the western regions?
Still got grass out there, haven't you? And so it's still able to grow. And one of the things that was most shocking to me was this capacity to persist for long periods of time in the soil. Reproductive females can last in the soil for a very long time with young, and they seem to go into a sort of dormant state and last for a long periods of time in those cool and dry conditions, and they will follow the soil moisture down in the soil cracks to under a metre. So they've got strategies in place to be able to persist. They hide under logs. They hide in the thatch. They're very good at finding protected environments in which to persist. So they seem to have strategies for getting round some of the things we think may have been protecting us. And with the enormous pressure that's coming from the east coast and moving inwards, I'm quite concerned, and I really do want to get out there and find it before it becomes a big problem.
What are some of the strategies that are in place to either help combat it or slow the spread?
So where it's moving west, really good biosecurity is key. Be careful about moving livestock without washing them, or monitoring hay that's moving west. I mean, there's a, you know, when people are desperate for feed, then they'll be moving it. This year we're a little bit better off. We've had the rain, but if you're moving hay, be sure about the paddocks that are producing the hay, particularly where they're moving west into new areas. In the areas in the east where it's already present, there's less concern about that, but you know, be sensible about that sort of biosecurity. But the main thing is get out there and look. It doesn't kill the grass instantly. It appears to die quickly, but that's a symptom that it's been there for a long time. So get in and look for the early symptoms and find those mealybugs. And please contact us, because we're very happy to show people how to find them.
As Associate Professor Caroline Hawkswell from the Queensland University of Technology, speaking there to the Country Hour's Madeline McCosker at Beef Week, which is on in Rockhampton at the moment. And on the topic of Beef Week, big congratulations to Tracy Hayes, the former Chief Executive of the NT Cattlemen's Association. There was a big awards night held in Rocky last night. It was put on by one of the rural banks, and Tracy won the Beef Achiever Award in recognition of all her work on the federal court case, the class action against that decision to stop the live export trade back in 2011. So well done to Tracy Hayes, who picked up that Beef Achiever Award last night in Rocky. It's 16 past one. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Let's have a little bit of Barnsley, and then we'll talk about the price of corn and why it's a big issue for Indonesian feedlots. Driving Wheels, Jimmy Barnes. G'day to all the truckies on the road this afternoon. It is 20 past one. You are tuned into the Country Hour. It is Budget Day in the Northern Territory. We dedicated pretty much the first half of today's program to the Territory Budget. Mark in Humpty Doo says, Matt, our interest payments on NT debt in 10 years will be $3.65 billion as a conservative estimate. Says a stunned Mark in Humpty Doo. He also wants to know if the Labor government's still borrowing money every single week just to pay the public servants. And Alex in Alice Springs says, Matt, I've heard the budget coverage on the Country Hour, taken a good look at Jono Gibson's online article, and haven't heard or read anything directly referring to the Red Centre. Ah, well, I'm all in favour of Central Australia becoming a separate territorial jurisdiction anyway. Says Alex. Oh, well, I mean, there's money for ranger grants, and there's money to upgrade the roadhouses. Is there much in it for Central Australia? That's maybe worth a discussion later on today on ABC Radio. 21 past one. Now, Indonesian feedlots, as you know, have been really struggling this year because of the record high price of Australian cattle. But what is also hurting the sector now is the high cost of corn, which often gets used to fatten cattle in those feedlots. The price of corn was one of the big topics raised during an online industry roundtable. Dan Fitzgerald has the story.
The Indonesia-Australia Red Meat Partnership brought together industry and government leaders for an online discussion about the state of the live cattle trade between the two countries. The Indonesian government's representative talked about how it wanted to reduce beef prices in the country. In response, an audience member suggested reducing the price of corn could help feedlotters get more kilos on cattle cheaper. But the challenge at the moment is that global corn prices are the most expensive they've been since 2014. And what appears to be exacerbating the problem in Indonesia is that the government's Bureau of Logistics, known as Bulog, is the country's only corn importer, which often sees the price increased further. Feedlotter Dicky Adewoso said it's an issue for a lot of agricultural industries in Indonesia.
Yes, it's not only us. I think our fellow from the poultry farmers also complaining about this, but I think there need to be some improvement restructuring in the licensing of importation of those items that we want to import. I think we are still lobbying to get much easier at the moment. I think the corn are also only being imported by Bulog at the moment. So I think that's what we have. We're trying to get over it if we can import directly. I'm speaking on behalf of the whole industry, not only my company.
Consolidated Pastoral Company, or CPC, alongside Running Cattle in Australia, operates two feedlots in Indonesia. Its CEO, Troy Setter, said cheaper corn prices would help drive down beef prices in the country.
If we could get world parity in corn price in Indonesia, we would feed a lot more corn to our cattle and we would have a cheaper production. So be very, very happy to have world corn price policy in Indonesia, and that would help with the efficiency of the cattle trade in Indonesia. But it would also reduce the cost and price of chicken, and I think we need to be mindful of that if we have cheaper grain for cattle, we'll have cheaper grain for chicken.
In response, the Indonesian Deputy Minister for Food and Agriculture, Musdalifah Muchmud, speaking through a translator, said the government was working on ways to reduce the costs of livestock feed.
We are currently starting discussions regarding what we can do to control or to halt the accelerating price of feed input for poultry. We are encouraging to import feed from other commodities such as wheat, which is not a restricted access commodity. Soybean is also expensive, and this is a raw material that is problematic. And in the long term, we are encouraging the use of other sources of feed. And as we know, there are actually many alternatives for substituting these feed inputs.
Also brought up in the discussion was how the spike in COVID-19 cases in India was affecting the importation of frozen buffalo meat from the country. Just 13,000 tonnes of the 20,000-tonne quota has arrived in Indonesia so far, Deputy Minister Musdalifah Muchmud confirmed. She said the government was working to make sure the quota was filled by the end of Ramadan. Here's the minister again, speaking through a translator.
With the corona case that we are facing, there is some postponement in the realisation of the imports. But we are also seeking other alternative suppliers. That is not easy because almost all countries are experiencing issues with supply with beef in their countries. So therefore, they are exporting in limited numbers. Although we are seeking alternatives, there are challenges. So this challenge means that up to this point, we are not making any changes. We remain optimizing what we have done before, which is buffalo meat. Buffalo meat is still arriving despite corona because the contract is ongoing. I think Bulog has 13,000 tons of buffalo meat, and hopefully there's a plan to increase this amount until the first week of May or the third week of Ramadan. We hope that this can be realized so that the need during Eid can be met.
Speaking on Indian buffalo, CPC's Troy Setter said its entry into the Indonesian market was actually pushing down local cattle prices.
I think the unintended consequence, though, that comes from cheap Indian buffalo is this is flowing into lower prices for Indonesian farmers. And we're seeing that now with the drop in cattle price for local farmers compared to the Australian cattle price and compared to some of those historical prices. And, you know, there's a real policy clash I see of wanting to have cheap food for Indonesians and cheap red meat, but wanting to have high cattle prices for smallholder farmers in Indonesia so that their 1, 2, 3, 4 cow farms are viable. And this is not really, you know, working. There's a real push down on price at the moment for Indonesian local farmers and their small and their cattle herds that is being directly caused by Indian buffalo, and that's going to be a challenge to deal with.
That's Troy Setter from the Consolidated Pastoral Company, and in that story by Dan Fitzgerald. It's time now on the Country Hour to head to the sale yards with all latest prices out of Roma. Here is Cheryl Stefano.
Good afternoon. Cattle numbers continue to fall down by 447 head to 5,468 at the Roma store sale today. Cattle were again drawn from a wide supplier with numbers from western and northwestern Queensland, and the overall quality of the yarding was varied. The usual buying panel was present and operating, including all regular processes. Heifers were present in larger numbers, accounting for almost half of the yarding, and again included a large single vendor run of PDIC heifers. Competition remained firm, but prices eased at the time of this interim report, with steers still selling. The limited number of lightweight yearling steers under 200 kilos made to an interim top of 586.2. Lightweight yearling steers under 280 kilos reached an interim top of 620.2. Medium-weight yearling steers under 330 kilos to restockers made to an interim top of 576.2, while medium-weight yearling steers under 400 kilos sold to an interim top of 520.2. Heavyweight yearling steers reached an interim top of 443.2. This has been Cheryl Stevano for the National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you for that, Cheryl. In the live export trade, as far as I can tell, there are no cattle ships due out of Darwin Port for at least the next week, the next 7 days. The cattle trade, not going as gangbusters as previous years. And as we learnt last week, MLA now predicting that the live cattle trade will be about 750,000 head of cattle this calendar year, well back on previous years. That's all we've got time for on today's program. Happy Budget Day and keep it rural.